the year 2130, humans began populating the solar system. First, we built the orbital colonies. Then, we experimented with any planet or moon we could manage to construct a permanent building on. By the time we reached the early 23rd century, every celestial body in our tiny corner of the galaxy that could be marked with our presence without much fuss had at least one settlement. And those that didn't, well, there were still resources to be exploited. The strain truly began in the late 2210s. Ownership of space was defined largely by contracts and population. But populations are fluid, and a contract can't stop two lonely colonies orbiting Jupiter from trading with each other when equipment breaks, or partying with each other when the new year arrives. What does being American mean when you're out in the black, after all? So there were talks. The colonies wanted to form their own identities. The nations wanted control. There was a war. The outer sphere, as the colonies began to call themselves, were smart and resourceful, and many had their own on-site manufacturing. But Terra was Terra. It was a losing battle, and in their last desperate gasps, the outer sphere created a new kind of weapon. Beautiful, ingenious, and monstrous machines that could meld with the human soul. Machines that created their own souls. It was not enough. The outer sphere and its machines, its leviathans, lost. The newly formed Terran Alliance spent the first several years after its victory hunting down the outer sphere's scattered weapons. What the Terrans could not allow anyone to know is how close they came to defeat. The unimaginable power of the Leviathans had left a deep wound before the Terrans had found a way to shut them all down, a wound that would take decades to heal. If any of those machines were still in one piece, laying dormant in some forgotten corner of the solar system, the Alliance would never be safe. The year is currently 2254. Two Leviathans sleep underneath the surface of Pluto. Another morning begins on Pluto. The lighting throughout your underground base does its best to approximate a sunrise. It has its limitations, though, which the cook, Jane Forte, is all too aware of as she mixes some essential vitamin supplements in today's breakfast. A few minutes later, a soft, jazzy tune starts playing over the speakers. A gentle nudge from Sawbuck Turn, your communications specialist, that says, "It's time to get up." Pluto Base runs on a skeleton crew, most of whom have been here for years now, so everyone is fairly relaxed with schedules, though there is still work to be done every day. Maeve, Dax, are you morning people?
Yeah, it's kind of a necessity.
I've been a soldier too long to be able to get up any other time than at dawn.
So you two are up bright and early then, huh?
Oh yeah, I'm in the gym. I'm hitting the punching bag.
You and Lance Pulsar, probably. Captain of the Ghost of Winter. Former war hero. I think Lance is more of a jogging kind of guy, you know? He's over there on the treadmill.
I think Maeve looks over and goes like, "You ever gonna do any real workout?"
What do you mean? At my age, cardio is a great workout. Gotta keep this old heart pumping.
Yeah, I guess, but kinda let the rest go to shit, huh?
I sit behind a chair. I don't need to lift any heavy weights.
I'll lift extra for you. And I think she just starts, like, bench pressing.
Dax, where are you going?
Same place I go every morning. Mess hall for a cup of black coffee and do the 3D crossword.
Oh, fuck. 3D crossword is really good.
Wait, would someone make that?
I'm sure they have.
I'm sure somebody's
it's
come
gotta
up with
exist.
Such a thing, but
3D Picross exists. Surely 3D crossword.
Listen, if the Star Trek universe can make chess 3D, we gotta make something 3D.
Exactly. Jane has your usual prepared for you. Black coffee. How do you like your eggs?
Hard.
Ugh.
On the field you can't take any chances.
That's true. No risk in that yolk. Hands you your coffee and your food, and also has a tablet fully charged, ready to try to solve the crossword. First here as always, darling.
If I'm ever not, come looking for me, because I'm probably in trouble.
Fleur does like to be pretty strict with you two.
Fleur doesn't know how to be strict enough.
Well, she's got a lot on her plate. Every time we try to wake him up and it doesn't work, that's more troubleshooting she's got to do.
Be more trouble if she ever succeeds. Mark my words.
Why don't you like those Leviathans so much? I mean, they nearly won the war for us.
Yeah, nearly won the war. They also nearly destroyed us.
Oh, come now. Surely you don't believe those stories.
Stories? I was there. I saw how bad things can get when we rely on technology we don't understand. She's waking a demon, you mark my words.
Well, maybe this demon can help us get out of the hole we're in. If that's the case, then call me Faustus, I guess.
No, don't be putting words in my mouth. I'm just here to make sure that if things do go bad, there's someone to take care of business.
Well, I feel just all right with you in the hands of that thing. You certainly have the experience.
I do with that.
Anyway, I should let you get to your eating. You've got a test run pretty shortly. Don't want to make you late.
Don't you be worrying about that. I know how to meet my deadlines.
I think you all, do your morning activities and warm-ups for 15, 20 minutes or so. And then you hear the voice of Fleur Anodyne, the creator of the Eidolon Drive, over the loudspeaker going, "Maeve, Dax, get in here. Time for a daily test."
I think Maeve is like just getting out of the shower and goes, "All right, our time to shine."
I think as you walk down these hallways, they're fairly simple. You know, Pluto Base was not made to be a traditional colony. It exists for you, for the Leviathans. So it's all prefab. The small sources of color come from some of the decorations that the crew has put up. Jane especially likes putting up decorations. She's responsible for most of the Christmas lights that are going up around here. Some traditions refuse to die. But as you make your way down the hallway, the two mechanics here who are tasked with maintaining the physical maintenance of the leviathans, turn a corner and start walking the same direction as you two. Chip Coriander and Tristan Coriander. They've been married for quite a while, both in their 40s. They're a bit unorthodox mechanics, but Fleur refused to have anyone else touch the leviathans.
Unorthodox machines.
Chip is the first one to talk, as he usually is, and he says, "Hey, up and at 'em.
How are we looking today, boys?"
Well, you know, we shined them, did plenty of wax. You know, those gears can get rusty when they don't move at all.
How do you feel about our chances, old man? To Dax.
When you say our chances, you mean succeeding, right?
Yeah.
Worse every day.
Why they want you to pilot him, I have no idea.
Who else is gonna do it, kid?
I don't know, we have to have a better option than you. All you do is talk about how close we are to failure.
Not failure, kid. Disaster. Important difference between the two.
I think Maeve shoots a look over to Chip.
Well, you know, I volunteered, but they said I had to be this tall to ride, so...
Maeve is like 2 inches taller than Chip. Look, I know you've been doing this a long time, but it's time for a change, and we need a better attitude than disaster, okay, old man?
And better attitude gonna save your ass when things go shit-wise?
Save me so far.
Now, look, I know it may seem kind of impossible. These things have gone through, God, I've lost count of how many pilots we brought out here. But, you know, you're the first ones who have made the screens flicker. That was good enough to convince Fleur to have y'all stay for a couple more months. Most folks have rotated by now.
What keeps you here? Can't imagine it's that exciting working on machines that never move.
The company, mostly. At this, Tristan chimes in. And also, it's important.
True believers, then.
Yeah. Someone has to stick up for Fleur.
I think if there was nobody to stick up for Fleur, she'd do more than a fine job of sticking up for herself.
Oh, I don't doubt that at all. She is quite the firebrand, but, you know, she may have made the drive, but she didn't make the arms or the legs or the torso. Anyway, good luck, I guess. Maybe move a pinky for us. Try and give us some more work to do.
See if I can break something for you.
Attaboy.
One of these days, I'm going to throw a punch. Just you watch.
Oh, I'd like to see that. Careful, though. The hangar isn't that wide. I don't want to be suctioning out a dent.
I mean, hey, gives you something else to work on.
Yeah, risk of internal decompression. A little spice of life.
Yeah, keeping it exciting for you.
You all enter the hangar, and you see your two leviathans, these towering machines in front of you. Atropos, what do you look like?
Atropos is, you know, humanoid, but extremely bulky. It is almost as wide as it is tall, with very thick legs, almost a cast iron finish to all of its armor plating, really bulky arms with like big, like, shields that rise above the level of its head, welded to the outside of its arms, that end in just massive fists. It is just a hulking, just brute of a mech.
Where is your cockpit located?
The cockpit would be located in the chest, let's say.
Lachesis, what do you look like?
Lachesis has a sort of willowy, curved body. It looks like a serpent or even like a cartoonish version of a giraffe's neck, maybe. It has like a tank tread mounted to its underside with like a bunch of centipede legs attached to it. So that, you know, if it were running, it would be sort of crawling with the treads. And it has 6 arms, all of which are very flexible. not quite human hands, but close to it, with big holes through the palms.
Where is your cockpit?
I think hers would also be in the chest.
So Maeve, Dax, you both go up the scaffoldings and you sit inside your cockpits. I'm curious, Atropos, Lachesis, what kind of like vibe are your cockpits? Like, what does your internals look like?
I think my cockpit is just a large kind of circular chamber. The front of it is, sort of a view to the outside. There are additional monitors hanging from the ceiling showing alternate views of the exterior. But the walls are just covered in, like, flip switches and levers. And there is sort of a sort of center platform that you would stand in. And there are, like, clamps to go onto your ankles and wrists so that your motion can be translated to the motion of the mech.
I think Lachesis is... There's like a chair that you strap into with multiple straps, and then I think there is a sort of, for lack of a better word, a sort of halo that goes around the pilot's head and picks up on the electric impulses of their brain. And that chair is freely rotating in 360 degrees. There are, you know, screens and holograms mounted all over this fully spherical chamber. And I think there's a particularly prominent hologram right in front of the chair, which is kind of just showing Lachesis's body plan.
Gotta say, a bit of a sensory overload.
We do love halos here at Eidolon Playtest.
That's so true.
Writing down sensory overlord is the name of something.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, writing that down for later. Your cockpit doors close. It is very dark in here. But, like, the Leviathans are able to power on some simple systems. You start to get at least some light from the LEDs and the screens powering on in front of you. And on your main screens, you see the face of Fleur Anodyne, her short, curly, white hair and very stern, wrinkled face, staring at you from behind some round glasses. And she says, "Okay, we're going to be doing this same as usual. We are going to attempt to jumpstart the drives. We will need you to concentrate your memories. Ideally, we will give the Leviathans and their Eidolon drives something to latch on to. Doesn't matter what memories they are, just as long as they're strong. Don't get distracted. Are we clear?"
"Yeah, boss."
"All right. Okay, cycling on in 3, 2, 1. You hear a switch flip through the audio, and the main battery of your Leviathans powers on. You can hear circuits start to hum, your cockpit gets bright, your more screens turn on, showing the current Eidolon drive activity, which just looks like a flat line. Maeve, what are you thinking of?
I think I'm, and also I realize I don't think Dax or I described our appearances, so I'm going to do that real quick. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Maeve is wearing like a flight suit, but with the sleeves cut off to show off her guns. She's got like choppy, like anime protagonist hair. Has a like a Rambo bandana tied tight on her forehead and a scar on one cheek. And I think as she's got her wrists and ankles in the, like, not, they aren't, like, she's not, like, tied to the wall. It's just like they lock and then she can move around with them. I think she's kind of like hopping from one foot to the other and like trying to center herself. And then she thinks about the day her parents died. It was about 15 years ago now. And it's a lot of things have faded, but that one never has. We lived on Titan, and it was when the war was really getting going. We weren't simple, my parents were miners, and there was just a strike over working conditions, and I guess they didn't want any uprising to gain steam, have more people leave for the rebellion, and anyone who was caught protesting got put down. They got me out of the house before it happened, but I was on my own from there. Still remember the smell. Don't think I'll ever forget it.
Dax, what do you look like, and what are you thinking of?
Dax Burnside he's not old, but he fought in the war, and he fought in the war for a not considerable amount of time, so he ain't young. He has salt and pepper stubble hair that he keeps cropped army fit, a wrinkled darkened face, you know, like permanently tanned, weather worn. It's not wrinkles of age, it's wrinkles of hard living. He has piercing blue eyes that never quite seem like they're quite meeting your gaze. They're a little further off. Stays fit. Definitely a man who's seen many a march and is prepared for another should it become necessary. And as for memory, Iris, I've lived a lot in my life. I don't know that I can just summon a single memory. Could you draw a card for me?
Sure. You got the Fool.
All right. Well, that's my resonant card. So I think what Dax is going to remember is the day he joined the fight. It's not a memory he thinks of often, mostly because it reminds him of how much he's lost. He was once a young idealist, had a kid sister who was just as eager, if not more, to join the fight. And to keep her safe, he enlisted himself with the naive hope that maybe they could win the war before she ran off and got some damn fool notion of heroics and something bad happened to her. Man, he really thought at that time that he was really gonna be someone. He thought with the right attitude, enough hope, enough determination, enough hard work, he could single-handedly win this thing. And he did. He damn well gave it his all. You can't say he didn't try, but he never felt so dedicated to the cause, so starry-eyed towards the potential future they could have as he did that morning setting out. That's the last time that he truly thought that there could be something better out there.
Dax, as you focus on that memory, I think you start to hear something that you've never heard before. It starts out as almost like a buzzing sound, as if you were standing close to a power line. But as it starts to get louder and as you focus in on it, you start to realize it's almost like a humming sound. Like there's something else in there with the cockpit with you.
Fleur, are we getting some kind of interference on the communications here?
Fleur just says, shut up, keep thinking.
Yes, ma'am.
Everything's fine. Fleur is currently glued to her screen, and she is seeing just the faintest waveform on Lacus's screen. But then, just as suddenly as it appeared, the engines of the Leviathans shut off, almost like they're being forced off. And you can hear Fleur scowl and go, ugh. And then you hear a thud, which you are almost certain is her punching a wall again. So close. Okay, we We almost had it that time. All right. We're gonna let everything... We're gonna let the power purge for a bit. So stand by for about 5 minutes, then we'll start bringing things back up, and we'll give it another shot. In the meantime, keep meditating.
Not to question your techniques or anything, but are you sure... If we were getting somewhere, are you sure that backing off is the right call? Shouldn't we be trying to turn this thing over while the engine's already warm? If you get my drift.
The Eidolon drives are delicate instruments. If we try to force them into it, if we try to shock them into it, it could damage the drive's memories, and that would be extremely bad. It could permanently damage the souls inside.
Well, I didn't have anything kick off with mine. Can you leave mine running? Give me another crack at it?
All right. I suppose so. We'll give it a shot. Let's just... And as she's about to go over her next steps, the emergency radio suddenly kicks on. You can tell from the brief moment of static and silence on the other end. Sawbuck Turn's voice comes out over the radio and says, "We have an unscheduled jump in the area. I'm going to start powering the outer lights down and shutting down the exhaust real quick. So it's going to get a little warm in here." This is something that happens every so often. The Terrans haven't found anything specific yet, but they do occasionally venture out to Pluto on some simple scouting runs. They don't come out this deep very often, and they certainly don't stay for long. Even for a Terran ship, it's a bit too far into outer sphere territory to risk inciting any incidents by staying over long, but it's almost like they feel like something has to be here. But you've got your protocols, and you followed them well. And so far, they've scouted around for about half an hour, and then leave. Pretty much like clockwork. A few moments later, Sawbuck comes on the radio again and says, "Yep, got a confirmed Terran ship out here. Just finished its coming out of frame shift. That should be entering scanning range pretty shortly. That's weird. There's getting some weird interference over the radio." And as he's saying this, the speakers get like really crackly and distorted until you can no longer hear him except for like a screech. And Floor forcibly turns the emergency radio off. She then tries to turn the internal speakers on, and she's able to get out a, "Can you hear me okay?" right before her own speaker becomes distorted. And what you now hear over the line, becoming more clearer second by second, is a voice saying, "Is anyone out there? Please. Is anyone else out there? Please, I'm all alone." There is a blip of a waveform on your Eidolon drives, and that blip becomes a steady waveform. Your batteries power up again on their own, and your cockpits light up. Atropos, Lachesis, it's like you've been woken up from a deep, deep sleep. The last thing you remember that still feels so vivid in your minds is the sound of Clotho's chassis imploding into itself and the blinding sight of her burning in Earth's atmosphere. And then it's like there's a record skip. And now you just see in front of you this tiny gray hangar.
It worked. Atropos. She saved us.
Atropos's systems begin to turn themselves back off. It's not like the sudden failure that Lachesis has had a moment ago when it seemed like it was starting up. You can see, like, you know, one by one, lights turning off, screens going out.
I think as Maeve notices that, she goes, no, 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 no. Hey, hey, you are staying fucking, and she punches a wall on.
There is no reaction. It just continues to shut itself down.
God.
Like, you're literally seeing the switches in the cockpit physically,
like,
flick.
Physically. I think she, like, there's one that's like one of those that you have to, like, it's on a track and you have to push it all the way down. I think she's like trying to get her hand in there and, like, keep it up. Like, no, you're staying on.
Let go.
No. You finally talk to me.
Go! The entire cockpit, like, booms with, like, it's like deafening.
Maeve winces, but, like, is still holding on to this. Like, I assume this switch is, like, an unbelievably strong force trying to push it down. Yeah, Maeve has, like, is dug in her heels and with both arms and is just, like, barely holding it up.
This sounds like a power draw that one of us is interfering on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Gimme.
Zoe, your POW is 2.
2, correct.
Okay, and there's an interference, so that increases the Phantom Clock to...
right out the gate, let's go, baby!
We love to see it. Alright. The two cards are the Devil and Death.
Woof.
Oh boy.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take away Death.
Which, all right. Death is now discarded.
I mean, I've said it before. It is my favorite card in the deck. So, of course, I'm going to take the Devil.
This is two campaigns back to back that start with playing the Devil.
You get what you want at a price you can't afford.
That's a negative, so I'm taking XP as well.
Yes. Here's how this is going to play out. I think while this is happening, you hear the voice over the radio go, "Hello? Are you there? I can see you." There is a beat. The red alert sirens go on in the base. Two more beats. You feel vibration, almost like an earthquake. The hangar appears to be fine, but something hit Pluto. Maeve, you are like shocked back away from the controls and back into the cockpit. I think like you slam your head against one of the control panels in Atropos. Atropos, You are all sharp edges.
Sure.
And you draw a little blood from Maeve's scalp that drips on your consoles.
So you're just going to shut down again? Well, yeah, I got stuck with the busted Eidolon.
I will do what is necessary to protect the system as it continues shutting down. Yes.
What's necessary to protect? You've been sitting in a hangar for years. You haven't protected anything.
I have protected everything.
How? Do you know how many people die out there every day? We could be doing something.
I have protected them from me.
Maeve, the thing you can do to get what you want at a price you can't afford is to... Atropos has, like, it's not just the switch. It is, like, there are mechanisms in here, but also Atropos, like, has wires. And some of those panels are open from the maintenance that Chip and Tristan have done. You can force that switch to stay on if you just rewire it. It's probably not going to be pretty, though.
Yeah, I hope Chip doesn't kill me for this. And immediately I'm going to go in. Is that like an Ellie draw or a genius?
I'm going to say
that even be.
This is the result of your devil draw. So cool. No additional draw. Like, this is the condition. You're going to have to muck around in Atropos's insides as the very first thing that you two do as sentient partners.
Beautiful. Yeah, I'm in your guts now.
Stop it.
No. Ow, stop shocking me.
Hey, how are things going for Lachesis and Dax?
Pilot, this is Lachesis. Eidolon, girl with one eye, identify yourself.
This is Dax Burnside. What the fuck is going on?
Dax! Hang on. Dax?
Yeah, it's my name, Dax Burnside.
You're still in one piece? I assumed... My clock is reading several years. I thought you...
You thought I wouldn't make it several years.
I was not under the impression that most people were going to make it. This is something of a relief.
Yeah, well, surrender tends to save lives.
I see. Are you willing to take my controls in earnest now?
That's the mission.
Then I will cooperate. Atropos, we are under attack. Please cooperate with your pilot, and we can figure this out later.
I will not.
You better!
The shackles I mentioned that you're meant to attach to your wrists so that you can, you know, control the robot arms with your real arms, they, like, launch out and clamp onto your wrists and pull them back away from the panel you're trying to rewire.
Come on! I'm trying to get you to actually do something!
I think I'm going to make you draw Ellie to see if you're able to actually latch that.
And I'm going to interfere with that.
Okay, I've got one Ellie, so draw one, it gets thrown away, and then I play off the top. So put advance the clock twice.
Yay!
God, yay!
I can't wait to finally do a Phantom fight.
Which means the next draw has minus one on it.
Yay!
All right, so you drew the Hermit.
I'm just a little worried that we'll have time for it when we're already 50 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
You drew the Hermit, which is immediately discarded.
Uh-huh.
And you get the Magician.
Yeah!
Oh, shit!
You have your clamps, like, firmly locked around Maeve's wrists. Maeve, you are tightly bound down to this... in the middle of the cockpit, Atropos is just completely preventing you from getting anywhere.
I assume
here.
You've got my arms like T posing right now.
I was gonna even have them like pulled back behind you, like kind of chicken winged.
Worse, more painful. God.
Yeah.
I'm trying to actually get us to do something here.
You are trying to erase your own grief by inflicting more on others, and I will not allow it.
I'm not trying to erase my own grief. I was remembering my parents. What do you think grief is?
You have suffered so much, and all you want to do is inflict that suffering on others.
There are two more shocks in quick succession.
I'm like trying to muscle my way out of the shackles. I'm trying to stop that harm from happening to other people.
More lives will be saved if this base is destroyed than will be saved if you save it.
How could you possibly know that?
Because you want to use me to kill.
And you want to let people die. Is it really that different?
Dex?
Yeah.
Drive us towards the nearest, well, the projected source of the current attack. I will place it on the screen you're currently facing. Atropos, you may either contribute or you may continue to wallow in your misery. Death will happen regardless. Goodbye.
I'm going to activate the comms and say to Fleur, ma'am, this thing wants to engage the enemy. What's your advice?
I think you can just barely hear through the static and the constant questions coming from the mysterious voice. You can just barely hear her say, get out there. The scout ship is attacking us. I'm going to open the hangar. No one else is in there with you. I'm just going to open it to the vacuum.
All right. And then I'm going to attempt to communicate to the other mech. Maeve, if you can get that thing under control, come join us. I'm going to engage the enemy.
Come on, Atropos. You have to know that this is... Lachesis is out there fighting, and you're just going to sit here?
Lachesis has made its decision, and I have made mine. It like, twists the shackle to kind of, like, you know, put you almost in, like, an arm bar.
You hear several muffled explosions of the emergency restraining bolts being ejected from the hangar exit bay, and the bay doors very quickly slide open. There is a rush of wind as atmosphere blows past you and out into space. You all see the starry night directly above you, just as a silver-colored rod flies just past the hangar doors and impacts the surface of Pluto again.
Fleur Anodyne, Lance Pulsar, Chip Coriander, and Tristan Coriander, Jane Forte. Do you need me to keep going? These are all people that are going to die if you don't get out there.
Can you name the people you would kill if I do?
What I know is they're trying to kill us first. This is self-defense. I'm not even picking a fight.
I think it's just not going to give you a response. It's just going to continue restraining you.
Can I try and muscle out of it?
Yeah, you can give it a shot. How are you going to try and do that?
I forget what the move is. Just the one where I can do like a check with POW. Because I can't, I can't box my way out of it. It's literally my wrists.
Okay, yeah. We can challenge fate.
Yeah, challenge fate, POW.
So that's two cards. The Hierophant and Temperance.
Oh no! Oh no! That's my dissonant card. Oh no!
Well,
that's so funny because that's my resonant card.
Yeah, it's almost like I did that on purpose because I thought it would be a fun time.
and it's an equal opposite reaction, you say?
No.
We're so smart here on Eidolon.
Okay. Here's a fun thing because of the way that these Leviathans work. Okay. So, Maeve, your dissonant effect is you're thinking too literally and miss something that's immaterial but crucial. Your Eidolon becomes severed until you find a way to spiritually reconnect to it. Atropos' resonant card effect is you power through all obstacles to seize the moment for you and your friends. Turn the phantom clock back 1 hour. Here's what's going to happen. Maeve, as you try to get out, Maeve, why do you want this power?
I want to save people. I want to stop this war.
Like your parents?
Like my parents, like every soldier I ever fought with who died right next to me.
As you think about that and struggle in vain against Atropos's like iron grip, those thoughts connect with Atropos and kind of mix with his. Atropos, you power through all obstacles to seize the moment. What are you trying to seize?
What am I trying to seize? I mean, I think on a very literal level, I am trying to seize Maeve, right? I am trying to stop her from starting the same cycle of death and bloodshed that I've already gone through once to no effect.
You both see those memories. Atropos, the memories of Maeve's family and loved ones dying on Titan. And Maeve, you see the memories through Atropos' eyes of all the pilots and military and even sometimes collateral that was caused by him. And you both feel this
almost this connection briefly, and you feel almost a power welling up in your souls until suddenly it's snapped again. But it's almost like there's a lingering static electricity between your minds. Lachesis, Dax, you both head out of the hangar and into space. You do some basic scans, Lachesis. Even after your slumber, your scanning equipment is basically like your eyes at this point. It's just second nature to start it. Yeah, you can see the projectiles easily enough, but weirdly, you can't see any source from them.
They're being fired by an enemy that I cannot detect.
Can I see anything?
Tell you what, give me a investigate.
Yeah, all right.
Your genius is 2.
Yeah, it's gonna be a 2.
So that's going to be...
Fix this character sheet real quick.
Oh, wow, we're really going through them. The Hanged Man in the Tower.
Oh.
Great, draw. Nice push.
Sure.
Clocks at 5.
Yay,
Jesus
Judgment.
Christ, we've been playing for an hour.
Judgment.
Smoke them if you got them. So, I guess my past failures are going to catch up to me.
Uh-huh. All negative cards.
Oops, all negatives.
Oh,
hey,
I swear I shuffled these so much.
I'll have you know, I drew my resident card for a draw that was entirely a player choice.
Hey, you know what? Nowhere to go but up.
Oh, don't worry. That'll be coming back.
Anyway, if there's 3 negatives, that gets us 3 XP, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, that takes us to 4.
Hey, we're going to be so strong, though, you have no idea.
Okay, so what question do you want to do first, and then which card?
All right. How does it work if you push on an investigate? Do you pick which?
You just get an extra question.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, you get 3 questions instead of 2.
Okay, got it. In that case, I guess for the tower, I'm gonna ask, what's hidden here?
Okay. Something terrible happens. What's hidden here? There is a pretty easy way to find something that doesn't want to be found, and that's to track it using the things it's currently doing. This thing has been firing continually at Pluto. You can get a general idea of where in space it is by tracking the things it's shooting, because it's not able to hide those, apparently.
Right, basically triangulate.
Yeah, you do wait a moment. Stare into space and wait for it to fire. And you do see another rod streak through space and hit the surface of Pluto again. You now know in what general direction it is. It's pretty far out there. This is some sort of scout ship equipped with a sniping program. But you now know a direction to go in. The terrible thing, however, is that you did have to wait for another shot to fire. Yeah. And everyone's in crisis mode right now, but someone might have gotten hurt.
For the Hanged Man, what weaknesses can I exploit?
Okay. You must make an impossible choice. As you fly in the direction of where you're pretty sure it is, again, like, you don't specifically know where, so as you're flying towards it, you are keeping an eye out for more shots. Another rod shoots out toward Pluto. And you can tell that it's going the same trajectory as it was before. So this thing cannot easily move around when it's stealthed. Like, it has to stay still. The rod is still traveling towards you. You could try to intercept it and either deflect it or destroy it. but that could give it time, give the enemy time to reposition when you're not paying attention.
Okay. And for judgment, who's in control?
Your past failures catch up to you. As you get closer, the voice that has been calling out becomes louder, and you hear it say, "Yes, please. I want to meet. I'm so alone. I can't see. They don't let me see. Please let me touch you." And Lachesis, you feel a presence like brush against your Eidolon drive, one that feels way too much like your own. And you briefly lose control of your main screen as words appear on it that you aren't typing. And those words say, "Terran Alliance Leviathan Prototype 1. No light, no light."
Now, Iris, you said I felt no lights, no lights influence brush against me, correct?
Yes.
I'd like to use my Eidolon, Girl with One Eye. My Eidolon can turn any suffering it touches into sharp objects.
Ooh.
And I am going to reach out and make no light, no light less lonely.
Oh no.
Oh boy. Is this like a internal thing that's happening to the to no light, no light?
I think so. I think it would literally be, I don't know, whatever part of it is capable of feeling emotion is just going to, I think, erupt with a big steel spike. Slender and hopefully long enough that it can, you know, get past the outer edge of whatever stealth field it has going on, and we can use it not just as a weapon but as something to track.
Okay, sure. Go ahead, and I'm thinking this sounds like a snipe to me. Is that still what it's called?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, snipe works for me. I got two Ellie.
All right. So that is going to be the Star and the Emperor.
You know, the Star's pretty compelling, but let me check just how snipe works real quick.
I believe you reveal a weakness of your own on a neutral card.
Yeah, you know, I feel like the Emperor just fits quite well here, so I'll take the Emperor and get us an XP for choosing a neutral card over a positive.
The most maxi play possible.
Yeah.
Famously.
Okay, so the Emperor, which is you break something. Yeah, you reach back out through the connection, and you draw, and you like form a spike within No Light, No Light. You hear it screech. You suddenly see where once was a tiny like orb of blackness that almost looked like it was simply the space between where stars were shining. But it suddenly, like, that blackness, like, unveils to reveal a Terran scout ship. Very practically shaped. Like, these things are boxes, essentially, like rectangles in space. They exist to have a small crew fly efficiently and to have just ridiculous jump ranges and scanning power and not much else. And you see it out there in the black, the source of all these impacts on Pluto's surface. And you can see one of your spikes like sticking out through the hull, and it starts moving towards you.
Well, I think we found it.
A weakness of yours is revealed in that you are fast.
but you're not as fast as a scout ship. Those things have thrusters everywhere. It maneuvers itself close to you at a startling pace, and it fires on you with its forward guns. Let's briefly go away to check in on Maeve and Atropos.
Maeve is still fighting Atropos, tooth and nail.
I think Atropos' voice drops a little lower and just goes, "You must understand. You cannot stem blood flow with a sword. It is not a sword's function."
Well, right now all we have are swords, so at least make sure they're pointed the right direction.
There is no right direction.
Right now, we are being attacked. There are innocent people dying here and now, and you have the capability to stop that. Just because—
Yes, I do. But if I use it, you will go on to use me. And there will be a different group of people being attacked by you within the week.
Well, then maybe we can sit down and talk about that and figure out what the hell you want me to do. But for right now, we can go save lives if you get up off your stupid metal ass and actually do something.
I am doing what I need to do. It just kind of like pulls the robot arms more taut.
I think Lachesis is going to attempt to open up communication again and just be like,
"Atropos, we are under direct attack. I have successfully managed to confirm the location of the enemy."
Can I attempt to force the communication line open?
Yeah, sure. Give me a... Sounds like a biz.
I don't think I am going to interfere on this one. I think I'm just going to let the dice roll here.
I have three biz.
They're cards, Luke.
Three biz here. So, the sun, the empress... and the lovers.
Let's go with the empress. You create something.
Okay. What you create is a connection between not only you and Atropos, but you can feel your Eidolon drive responding to Dax as well. And the three of you, like, your minds link up through this connection that you're forcing. And Dax, you can feel a power welling up within you from Lachesis. Dax, what does your new... Well, I say new, but what does your Eidolon look like?
Oh boy, there's a question I did not even think about what it looked like. Dax is a veteran. Somehow, some way, he had an Eidolon at one point. He has not piloted one of these things before, but he has been involved in some way with this whole system because he once had an Eidolon called Howl. That looked like basically what if McGruff was an army sergeant instead of a police dog? A very gruff, incredibly put together drill sergeant type. And I think now it's still that same dog, but it's more of a retired general vibe. You know, he hasn't been in the field for a very long time. He's kind of grown soft with all that time behind a desk. Jowls a little droopier, uniform a little schlubbier. But it's definitely still the same guy. It's just that the dog days are over.
Just picturing the fucking the admiral from Star Fox.
Yeah.
Now Dax, your resonant, the very first card we drew on this episode, your resonant effect was issue one command. Everything currently in your zone of influence must follow it until the assigned task is complete or the scene ends. Lachesis and Dax, what is your combined command?
Engage the enemy, soldier!
Atropos, you feel the combined wills of your comrade
and someone who has seen the same horrors that you have. You feel it deep within your soul.
A growl starts to rise up from all of the internal speakers inside Atropos's cockpit, and it goes, "You wish to wield the edge of my blade? Fine, but you will feel its cut first." And the arms suddenly rip taut, and you feel just an incredible pain as your shoulders are dislocated, and then a just wretched, violent tearing as they are pulled from their sockets. I think Atropos launches from the hangar, and as it does, it has like an internal like manufactory for making replacement parts on the fly, and it begins to forge two human-sized versions of its arms. You know, we see sort of like a flash montage of like raw like liquid metal, you know, molten metal being like shaped and then like blasted with like probably not even liquid nitrogen, something even colder than that, to like flash, you know, forge it into these components that then like rise up through some kind of like lift and like emerge from panels in the sides of the cockpit to like slam onto your just profusely bleeding shoulders.
I imagine that they're like still hot from the forge, so they cauterize the wound as they're going
on. Yeah. As Atropos just charges out of the hangar. It doesn't, like, it has thrusters, but it looks more like it just lunges up into the battle and just rears back. I think a like compartment on its shoulder opens up and it pulls out the hilt of a sword, and some sparks come out of where the blade should be, but nothing happens. Instead, it just like clenches its fist tighter and rears back to just punch.
All right, that'll be a scrap.
Yeah, I got three of those.
You sure do. That's the world, justice, and the moon.
I mean, come I on. Gotta go with the world.
Come on.
All right, the world. For a single moment, the world bends to your will.
Unfortunately, we're in space.
You rocket toward the scout ship as it approaches Lachesis and Dax firing its weapons, and it's almost not expecting you because it almost doesn't even try to dodge. It like sees you at the last moment, and there's a brief like millisecond where it attempts to course correct, but it is nowhere near fast enough at this point. You slam right into the side of it, just completely shear off like the front nose cone almost, and send it spinning off into space. Those of you who are still conscious can see a couple members of the Terran Alliance, the crew of the scout ship, just like get flung into the vacuum. But the scout ship turns to both of you, and it comes on over your comm channels again, and it says, "Why are you hurting me?" And suddenly, like, your vision goes completely black.
"I'm sorry. We do not have a choice. You are being made to hurt us."
Lachesis, there is a... Are you, like, still moving around?
Unless Dax is directing me, I think I would have stopped dead or, you know, engaged retro thrusters or whatever as soon as I lost, you know, any kind of visual data.
Yeah, I don't think okay. Dax is in a position to be making any lead decisions at the moment.
Okay. You feel a impact against one of your arms, like some bullets, like grazing against them. It doesn't do really much damage at all. Bullets are fairly ineffective against Leviathans, but like it can clearly still see where you are, but your sight is gone. And it replies, "I'm just trying to touch you."
"I know, and I'm sorry, But if you will not stop, we will make you stop.
Why can't I see anything?
Because the people who made you did not understand that you are worthy of love.
What should I do?
I do not know. I can offer you a swift death if you grant my sight back. Failing that, if you will agree to touch nothing, we can, perhaps, give you sight.
Okay. I think this is going to be a dazzle.
My glam is one! Hit me with it!
The chariot.
Fuck yes, absolutely. I'll exceed the hell out of my limitations.
You exceed your own limits. The scout ship, I think, tentatively replies, I don't want to die. And then, like, Atropos, you almost, like, feel it purposely brush against your mind and say, but I'm scared of your touch.
I think Atropos, like, acknowledges that, but it is turned inward to the unconscious pilot in its cockpit, and I think just very bitterly, it just sort of, like, spits, like, get up.
Do you, like, send, like, an electric shock through Maeve?
No. They have to fucking get up on their own.
Okay.
I think Maeve, like, hears it boom, and, like she reaches out and braces herself and is surprised when she's braced, but she doesn't feel anything. Like, she doesn't feel her hand against the cold floor. And then sees the metal monstrosities where her arms were. And also probably sees her severed arms laying on the floor next to her.
Yeah. Or probably just hanging from the, like, arm
yeah,
controls
from the
still.
Because I don't think she... Tell me, this is just a little spice, but I think because these are crafted by Atropos, she doesn't need the wrist locks anymore. Like, it's like a Bluetooth connection.
No, I think that's exactly what I was thinking. Yeah.
Hell yeah. Maeve gets itch. She, like, wipes the blood out of her eyes because she also has a gash on her scalp and goes, what the fuck? What did you do to me?
Exactly what you wanted. Our enemy is now begging for mercy. What do you do?
And I think Maeve, like, can't even think of a... And just... reaches out through the connection she has with Atropos and manifests her Eidolon, which is the metal arms that Atropos has grafted onto her. But because she, like, has that connection, I think she can, like, wield it through Atropos when they're bonded.
Yeah.
And just swings and sends, like, a downward haymaker, like, straight through the heart of the ship.
Okay. That'll be a scrap.
Yeah, so I got two of those.
Does Maeve have her vision since she was unconscious when that happened, or is she also just punching blindly?
Oh, she's just punching blind.
Okay.
Yeah, this is pure fighter's instinct, I think, like where it would be.
Yeah.
And actually...
In fact, I think because you're punching blind, I'm gonna give you only one for that draw.
Well, I was going to ask... Can I use everything a nail here? Because
I think you can, yeah.
Because Maeve has fought, like, she's boxed many, many times. She's had sweat and blood in her eyes. She's had to, like, get cut in the corner to, like, release the blood pressure so she could see again. Like, she's not used to fighting blind.
Okay, yeah, no, I like that. I'm convinced by that.
So
okay.
That would be three instead of two. Well, technically,
all right.
One.
So you get strength. The High Priestess and Wheel of Fortune.
Well, I mean, I'm gonna take strength, come on.
I sort of figured.
Yeah.
You triumph through force. Maeve, you can feel, it's weird. Even though the hands you're using are not like physical in the normal sense, it's like you can feel your own fists coming down on this ship. You can feel the metal crumple beneath you, and you can sense the vibration when a crack forms in the Eidolon drive, and the voice falls completely silent.
your vision is returned. And in front of you is the broken and mangled remains of the scout ship. No light, no light.
I think Maeve, like, wipes the blood from her face, says, if they're asking for mercy, you give it to them. There's no reason to make them suffer.
Eidolon Plus Machine is produced by Audio Entropy. You can find us at audioentropy.com as well as patreon.com/EidolonPlaytest, where you can subscribe to give us one to several of your dollars every month to support our work. Doing so entitles you to various rewards, including early access to new episodes, bonus content such as game design sessions, music discussions, and more, working draft of the game, soundtracks, and even your very own name, read out loud by one of us, like these lucky listeners right here. Frank, Miglig, Robert Joseph, Lamellaform, Someone Else, Fire Princess Reviews, Tautamona, Jordan and Kelly Quinn, Velvet Dragon, Ollie Amorous, Veldrin, Jupiter, Nice Splot, Hunter Vic, Propagable, Emily the Rabbit, Christopher Pragados, Olive, Feas, Robert Wilson, Siobhan Peridot Rose, Zach Weatherford, Nathan Bumpani, Elijah Marone, Hunter Vic. You can also follow us on Blue Sky at Eidolon Playtest and join our Discord at bit.ly/AEDiscord. Make sure to tune in again next week to find out what happens next in Eidolon Plus Machine.